being at this meeting is that you see old friends, longtime friends that you may not see in between. I just wanted to thank Maggie, especially for, I don't know if you all got this wonderful handout. Yes, we could use more water up front. It's wonderful in every way, but she wasn't able to access our logo. So just imagine that this logo is on here as well when you read that wonderful piece. It's so nice to have something like that to take away. One other unpaid, unpolitical announcement is do pick up a sheet in the back. This organization is a public health organization, and as such, we prioritize public health good. For that reason, we have been boycotting Nestle's for more than 25 years. In spite of the fact that that is membership policy that we all voted on together, this meeting has Nestle sponsorship, Nestle advertising, and a Nestle exhibit. So there's just a little sheet here suggesting that you boycott those activities and that you tear out the page, the first fold out of your thing, and write a comment on it. You can do that after my talk when hand it into the MCH section, or Mary Rose Tully, if she's still here with the white hair, she'll collect them. The MCH section has decided to let the executive part of our organization know that the membership is not happy when membership policy is ignored. Did I take up a minute of my time already? I will launch into commercial food and lactation devices. Basically, each of us comes at this discussion from a slightly different angle, and perhaps mine's the oddest angle, because we really don't have a commodity and we really don't have an industry that backs breastfeeding. In fact, one of my favorite stories, I was at a meeting of the United Nations SCN, Standing Committee on Nutrition, and one of the speakers stood up and he said, in vitamin A we put in 100,000 of public dollars and we got back 400,000 of private dollars to help our way forward. And I said, that's nothing. In breastfeeding, we put in $50,000, and we get $8 billion working against us. So they obviously don't know how to leverage industry as well as we do. Unfortunately, it's in the wrong direction. Let's today talk a little bit about recognizing the impact of market versus impact of scientific information on things that impact on breastfeeding. Look at some of the outcomes of overuse of medical devices. Each of you, I hope, will come away with this with at least one way in which, an idea of at least one way in which commercial infant formula manufacturers capitalized on the HIV pandemic and realize that this is not a benign thing, and describe alternatives to the use of breast pumps. So let's go into these topics right now. First of all, for those of you who aren't familiar with breastfeeding, we're not just talking about a nice lifestyle choice. Exclusive breastfeeding and continued breastfeeding for 1 year has been unequivocally named as the number one preventive intervention to reduce neonatal, infant, and child mortality. Punto. If you go down the list of the other things that impact, that's 13% reduction. You can see the third one down, insecticide-treated materials, very important to reduce malaria. The third one down is continued breastfeeding with age-appropriate complementary feeding. That's the third most important prevention. And down further, you look at newborn temperature management, skin-to-skin would prevent an additional 2%. If you add this together, optimal infant and young child feeding, devoid of any industry intervention, could result in prevention of a fifth, one in five, child deaths that occurs these days. And I don't know if you've been reading the press, but just the week before Labor Day, UNICEF announced that there has been a slight reduction in child mortality around the world, and they list it as the number one reason, progress in supporting exclusive breastfeeding. So this is widely accepted, widely stated. This is from the Lancet series on child survival. There's also a Lancet series on neonatal survival that says that up to, they said 55 to 87, I actually think that's extreme, percent of neonatal deaths could be prevented by breastfeeding. But that's what they said, not me. Where, however, do we spend our money? If you look down the list of these interventions, where do we spend our international dollar? The recent survey from the Child Survival, oh, I'm going to get your name wrong. Thank you very much. Found that when Americans are asked what's the number one killer of children around the world, what do they say? HIV/AIDS. Look where that is in terms of the nevirapine and replacement feeding together. Could possibly save 2%. In nutrition, where does our money go internationally? Very heavily into vitamin A. Zinc is there really as a diarrhea treatment, not really a nutrition intervention per se. So we have a disconnect between what really would make a difference in child survival and where the international dollar goes. Why is that? Partly simply because who is the lobbyist? Who gets the word out? Who pushes? Who has the money to push? Who has the multi-billion dollar industry to get the ear of people? I think the problem with the inappropriate push of formula in situations where it shouldn't be was underlined by this recent crisis in Botswana. There was a diarrhea outbreak in Botswana that resulted in mortality at a rate at which it was diagnosed as an international emergency. They had extremely high mortality going on. When CDC went in to look at what was causing it, they found that not breastfeeding was increasing the odds of going to an emergency room. I don't have it up there, but the odds ratio for death was 8. So it's a huge impact of not breastfeeding. Now, why weren't these children breastfeeding in Botswana? Because with the HIV pandemic, the country had decided to supply free formula to all children in Botswana. CDC had encouraged it, that you should give formula to all children of HIV-positive mothers. However, in situations where there's high levels of ambient disease, that's not the right way to go. These children died as a direct result of a formula intervention in an HIV program that was really pushed heavily by industry in this country. So let me get off my soapbox for a minute and let's get back to the basics. The impact of overuse of intervention developed for medical needs. Let me just first say that these things were developed because they were needed. Formula was needed. We had a period of time where there were fewer wet nurses, physicians were becoming a more prevalent part of society, and pediatricians were desperate for a way to help children survive who, for some reason or another, could not breastfeed. And so formula based on cow's milk were developed. They were tested, basically, could a child survive them? So it wasn't that they were looking for excellence in nutrition, it was whether a child could survive them. And overuse has been a massive, uncontrolled, and unmonitored experiment. What is formula? Anybody? It's what? It is a dead product because it's been pasteurized. What else is it? Actually, you know, Sally, that's a very common answer. People say it's chemical. It's mostly watered down cow's milk. Formula is mostly watered down cow's milk and a chemical mix added to it with some emulsifiers to mix it up. Actually, they really don't do much. It's mostly watered down cow's milk, which changes the ratio once you add some chemicals and then you pasteurize it. Some of them fuss with it a little. These wonderful, you know, protein comfort proteins that you see in the commercials, not naming the product name. What are comfort proteins? Anybody? Actually, what it is hydrolyzed protein. It's broken down proteins. And they used to advertise it as hypoallergenic. After several years of doing that, they were told they couldn't do it anymore because there was no proof that it was hypoallergenic. So they had to find a new way to sell them. So now they're comfort proteins. And that's a trademark. It doesn't mean anything. So we have a situation where companies can advertise experimental products for a period of time with a brand name on that product that's allowed without proper testing. And the ARC study, did you all see the ARC study this year on the risks of not breastfeeding? In February, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality put out a paper. First author is Stephen Ip. Is he here? In any case, it's a wonderful meta-analysis of all the data from developed countries on breastfeeding. And it makes the point very clearly that to not breastfeed a child means to increase its risk of a list of diseases that are pages long, well-proven studies, multiple studies. It's the kind of thing, if you had a miracle drug to do it, you would buy it 10 times over. What would you pay for something that could reduce your risk of diabetes, Crohn's disease, cancer, diarrhea, otitis media, what am I forgetting? But it goes on and on. And then the mother reduces her chance of breast cancer, possibly ovarian cancer, and definitely reduces her loss of blood postpartum. What would you pay for such a thing? Meanwhile, there's been marketing against it. Now, in the electric pump industry, the pump was also developed for a very important reason. Electric milk extractors were developed to augment hand expression in the situation of prematurity or when increasing milk supply is vital. There's a medical reason for them. They're very useful for those medical reasons. However, express milk is not the equivalent of breastfeeding for many reasons. The milk is combined. You don't get the change of milk over time. You certainly don't get the closeness in the same way between the mother and the child. You don't get the skin-to-skin contact. You don't get the mother being with the child enough to get the immune factors going. That are, if the mother's separated and expressing milk, she's not in the same milieu as the baby. So she's not building up the antibodies to the same diseases that the baby's being exposed to, and so on and so forth. So it's just not the same thing. It's something we have adopted because we are the only country in the world that does not have paid maternity leave. And women here are desperate. However, this is a second massive uncontrolled and unmonitored experiment because we simply do not know the difference between feeding, breastfeeding and feeding expressed milk over time. There's an assumption they're the same, and there's absolutely no proof that that is so. In fact, there's physiological argument that it cannot be so. Right now, we are in a situation where we're beginning to get human milk for profit. Now, this is a new frontier in commercialism. There's a real logical need for human donor milk, and we have donor milk banks. We now have a for-profit organization. Will they adopt the same advertising practices? Will they adopt the same kind of over-marketing of their product compared to breastfeeding? That we need to wait to see that, but it's something we should be aware of. So we have these three things that were developed because of a basic need, but can be overused and abused basically because of marketing and the profit, the need for profit. We do have, however, the code of marketing of breast milk substitutes. And this should serve to protect us a bit from these aggressive marketing practices. And a lot of these slides I did with David Clark when I was working at UNICEF. Stephen Lewis, who is one of the world's most eloquent speakers, said, "Those who make claims about infant formula that intentionally undermine women's confidence in breastfeeding are not to be regarded as clever entrepreneurs just doing their job, but as human rights violators of the worst sort." Human rights violators of the worst sort. The aim of the code is to contribute to the provision of safe, adequate nutrition by protection and promotion of breastfeeding. Come on. Okay, let's go back. By ensuring the proper use of breast milk substitutes on the basis of adequate information and appropriate marketing. Does that sound terrible? Safe provision by protecting, promoting breastfeeding, and ensuring proper use of the substitutes on the basis of adequate information, appropriate marketing. The preamble specifically says that infants are a vulnerable population, and therefore the marketing of breast milk substitutes requires special treatment. It's not like just any other kind of candy bar that you're going to buy. It's not that kind of choice. The word choice sometimes is misunderstood and misused. In this case, there's not a choice between the two. You have what is physiological norm, and you have this other substitute. So what does the code say? No advertising of breast milk substitutes. No advertising. No free samples to mothers. How are we doing in the United States, gang? No promotion in healthcare facilities. No company personnel to contact mothers. We're doing better on that one than we used to. No gifts to health workers. Okay, gang? Health workers should never pass samples on to mothers. This is not advancing nicely. Did we miss any there? No words or pictures idealizing artificial feeding, including pictures of infants on the label. And then what applies perhaps more to us as health workers, information to health workers should be scientific and factual. So a group could be here, but what they should be providing to us is scientific information. Information on artificial, you're going to love this one, information on artificial feeding included on the labels should explain the benefits of breastfeeding and the costs and dangers associated with artificial feeding. No comment. The main thing is that this applies in every country, whether or not the country has passed law. It's very unusual for WHO to do this, but this is the case, which means that the manufacturer must comply here in the United States, even if we don't have law. Okay, and it doesn't say that substitutes should not be available. It just says it should be available under advice of a health worker and logically. And we can report violations if we see them. NABAREAL, N-A-B-A-R-E-A-L, you can go to the web and find them. They record violations of the code and make them known. We can also report problems with formula feeding to the, thank you. I was trying to remember if it was the FDA or the FTC, the FDA. You also can report misinformation in commercial advertising to the FTC. And they look at it for about 9 months, and they slap the hand of the company that's doing misleading information. They say, oh, so sorry, we'll take it off the air. But 9 months is about how long an ad campaign runs anyway. Okay. Marketing is not unsubtle. These are two pictures from a book on bonding. And which mother looks happier? Which mother looks more interested in her child? Which child looks like it's desperate with its hands and toes spread wildly hanging off of the tip of a nipple? Which baby is not going to succeed in breastfeeding when its body is twisted away from the mother like that early on? And the bottom line is, which one is under a black cloud? So marketing is actually quite... Just a few other examples that I picked up last year at a pediatrics conference. Where is the scientific information? The Ross Labs actually had a piece of scientific information in the back if you asked for it. And this was my favorite. Can you all see that there's a can of formula in the breastfeeding support kit? So this kind of marketing definitely, when I was in college, we used to get little 5-packs of cigarettes handed out. It definitely created a situation where it created addictive behavior. So as a result of marketing practices, women are not getting the correct information. Parents are not being corrected for misinformation. There's a general misbelief that artificial feeding is normal, that formula is something magic. Also, marketing encourages just, there it is, that expressed milk, even pasteurized milk, is the equivalent, and we know that's not been proven. Decisions are being made to artificially feed infants without knowledge of the risk to the infants and mother health, and that's the bottom line. Why? Why are we not getting the information out? We simply don't have the resources going into it that are going into the misinformation. Bottom line, according to UN agreements, governments are not fulfilling their duties towards parents and children. There's several of the articles that you can go back to that will tell you more about it. So what's going on? I just wanted to really do this one slide, and then we'll conclude. What has been the response of the commercial sector to code activities? Well, they sued the government of India when they passed the code. They tried to stop the code in Peru by waving the flag of World Trade Treaties. In fact, the World Trade Organization lawyers have told us that formula is exempt from world trade protection of marketing because it deals with the health of vulnerable population. So they can't wave that flag. They persecute whistleblowers. They've jumped on this public-private profile of the UN to say that they can't be suppressed because they are a legitimate private industry and therefore should be part of the UN's public-private discussions. There was actual threat to the president of the Philippines that if the code went into being, that all U.S. commerce would withdraw from the Philippines. And we have increasingly misleading advertising. So what are the alternatives? I think all of us as public health professionals have to pay attention to these marketing techniques. We have to seek the physiological and non-commercial alternatives. Hand expression of milk works. I did a study in Chile where we didn't have pumps. Women very successfully hand express milk. Where did the need for the pump come from? Use commercial products judicially and when truly necessary. Continually assess what are the true barriers to early and exclusive breastfeeding and fight for reform in these areas. And a lot of this has to do with the medicalization and, if you will, the commercialization of labor and delivery. We have to get paid leave in the workplace. So just to conclude, stop treating these folks as good folks. And I think we have to look to how we got rid of some of the tobacco advertising. It took us a long time. But what is tobacco? It's an addictive thing. It's addictive because its use creates, you have the increasing need for more, and it has a negative health effect. When you introduce formula, there's an increasing need for more, and it has a negative health impact. So we have to look at it similarly as at least one possibility. Okay, we're all going to do all this? So the marketing practices associated have led to population norms that are not in the best interest of mothers and children. Public policy can and must be developed to reduce potential harmful health outcomes that result from the overuse and misuse of these products. Thank you very much.